But now, let's welcome Michael Zöllner and Georg Hofstetter from Magic Lantern. And they will tell you about free software on your cameras. So afterwards, you can go make a lot of photos from the conference, tag them with Linux tag and reclaim your device, publish them under free software, free licenses. And yeah, so I'd like to hand over. Thanks. Welcome them.
Thanks for the introduction. Hello, everyone. So, Magic Lantern. Just a bit about me. I'm actually a user of Magic Lantern. I joined the team maybe 1.5 years ago. So I'm one of the guys who uses DSLR video cameras, photo cameras as video cameras on the field. So I'm always very interested in what the hackers are actually managing to get out of these cameras. For example, my camera is a 5D2. It's from 2008, and there are still enabling stuff and implementing new functionality that nobody would have thought is inside of that hardware. So for me, it's something that helps myself as well as many other people. So obviously, it's a free open source project and released under the GPL. And it's not really a firmware per se, so we are not flashing the firmware, but it's a software that runs alongside the original firmware by Canon. And we're trying to change as little as possible, but we'll go into details about that maybe later on. For those who are not up to speed on what is really happening in that market and with these cameras, as you can see, those are actually photo cameras. So they're meant for professional photography. And when in, I think, 2006 or 2007, Nikon introduced the first video functionality in those cameras, it was more of a gimmick, the possibility for maybe a war photographer in some country just snapping a few clips of video, but it was not meant for professional film production. So Magic Lantern has been trying to change that while at the same time companies realized the potential for video functionality in those cameras and also implemented some functionality, but they're a bit slow about what they want to implement and what they're still waiting with. So they are using DSLRs in Hollywood movies by now, and obviously they have their shortcomings, but in some situations, for example, when there's limited space or when it's very dark, because these cameras, they have large sensors, it's possible to capture scenes that would not be possible with an Arri Alexa camera, which costs maybe 80,000 euro. So it has its problems, but also it has its benefits. So this I already addressed. Who would use Magic Lantern? As you can see, tinkerers are probably those who are most happy with Magic Lantern, because obviously when you can access your device and run your own software on it and implement new functionality, that's really great for us tinkerers. But we do believe that almost everyone else, except for those people who just want to point their camera and snap a picture and not care about correct manual focus, about exposure and all that stuff that a professional photographer or a filmmaker would care about, they might not be too happy with Magic Lantern. But on the other hand, by now we have so many advanced auto functionality in there as well. For example, snapping pictures when something moves in the scene or stuff like that. So I do believe that even people who are not as advanced in photography can benefit from Magic Lantern. So, as you can see, we've got a quote here. You will see absolutely no need to uninstall it, nor will you want to, unless you're one of these folks that prefer to shoot in full auto all the time, in which case you'll find Magic Lantern dreadfully unhelpful. All right, so you can see where we're trying to aim here. I'm using it professionally on a maybe day-to-day basis for projects, and my clients pay me for it, and it's working perfectly. I never have any problems as long as I take care of how to set everything up. But I think you have those problems with the professional cameras as well, so that's basically something one has to work with anyway. How did it all come together? At first there was one guy, Tremel Hudson. He decided that he wanted to squeeze out a little bit new functionality of his camera. It was the 5D Mark II from 2008, and the camera had horrible audio functionality. So there was this functionality that tried to guess the gain level of the audio, and when nobody was saying anything, there was a lot of noise, and as soon as someone stopped, everything was pushed down, and you couldn't really work with it in a professional way. So Canon had not implemented the functionality to turn off this feature, so people were trying to get all kinds of solutions for that, and he decided to do it software-wise by hacking the device. The boot method was based on another project that already existed. CHDK is a project for the smaller Canon cameras. So they have been a lot of help in giving us information on how to get into our cameras. The code was first submitted on Bitbucket in 2009 in April, and then the community started to get together, at first on a mailing list, and then everything else followed. Vimeo and Wikis and stuff like that. Then in 2010, another guy, Alex, he took over because Tremel had other stuff to do, and Alex is still the main coordinator and developer, and you can see how he glues everything together. There are a lot of core people, but still he's very important, and he's not that type of benevolent dictator, but in a way, through all the effort and time he spends with it, everyone trusts his decisions most of the time, and everything is resolved peacefully, I guess. HDR video was another thing that really went through the internet and through the blogs, the possibility to capture capture video in two different exposures, which gives you a much larger dynamics of the light information. We'll go into that later on. But that changed something in the way that blogs that were interested in just feature and filmmaking got interested in the project. Then we started the whole community and decided that we wanted to set up something that was a bit more open and accessible to everyone. So that's magiclantern.fm. You should probably visit that if you're interested in using Magic Lantern on your cameras. Then 2012 also we opened Magic Lantern for another camera where we had difficulties in doing that. And now just maybe 4 weeks ago or something like that, HDR video was introduced, which really changes a lot of things when you're filmmaking and pushes these cameras up to a level that even the very professional cameras usually cannot do. So we go into that later on as well. We've got ports for all these cameras listed up there. So that goes from the very cheap small DSLRs by Canon up to the 5D3, which is a €3,500 Pro DSLR. Some ports are still in progress, others are a bit more stable, but usually if the hardware allows us to, we implement all the features through the whole setup. Now everything is figured out and it's very easy to port things. Well, it's still a lot of work, but it looks like you guys are managing it pretty well. We've got a community of about 20,000 registered users. So those are only the guys that actually participate in the forum. So you can see that this project has a large user base, and we're testing the software on so many cameras in so many situations, and everything seems to work pretty well. We've got 51 contributors. It was just 2 days ago I checked Olo for the statistics of the project, and they had this sentence which you should probably take with a grain of salt, because those statistics, I don't know how reliable they are, but it gives you a hint. They say this is one of the largest open source teams in the world and is in the top 2% of all project teams on Olo. So what they're trying to say is that the active developer base is pretty large. We've got 51 contributors right now for the project. I guess there are much larger projects, but still you can see that it really sped up in the last days and weeks, especially. So how does our team work today? We've got a core team. They do all kinds of... you see, probably the people who put all the pieces together are those who take the patches, just like in any project. But we don't have a strict management or any kind of hierarchy. Right now, it's all very flexible. We'll have to see how we can hold that up as things get bigger. But right now, it's still working pretty good. We've got people who care about special features all over the cameras and try to pull them then. And then we've got people that just care about one specific camera and try to enable all the features that are in the entire code base for this specific camera. So like I said, we try to make it like this. All people together play nicely and there is no dictator and there's no overruling. So far this worked out pretty good. We'll see how it goes on. Usually new developers have a background in embedded developing, so the level of expertise for you to have to really help in the low-level stuff is obviously pretty high, and you have to have some knowledge of how the hardware works. But if someone is interested and joins the team, usually we can help them up to a certain level. Also, there are other things where people can help, like for example the menus or stuff like that, or just generally the documentation. You all know that from the other projects. Like I already said, the community is rising and we have to figure out how to do some kind of support, even though that's probably not the main idea of the project. We have to figure out how to manage the massive interest that has risen lately. So usually we can see that with every feature that someone enables, someone spots a new memory address, spots in a possible new functionality, usually it trickles down to the other options. So when you figure out one thing, for example, one dev wrote a tool that helped us figure out how the memory was structured and where interesting things were happening, and that led another developer to find a way to dump the raw image information that is collected by the sensor inside of the camera. And once that was done, someone was able to analyze this raw data and convert it to a different format. And all of a sudden, through the through all these steps at different times by different people, we had a functionality that nobody even knew it was possible in the beginning. So in this case, raw video, we'll go into that later on, which makes the cameras really, really interesting. So what we're trying to do now is show you a bit how the camera works in its original mode, and then the functionality that Magic Lantern adds to it. So Georg is going to film me and present some stuff. And right now we're starting the camera in the way it's meant to be by Canon. So this is the camera with all its functionality as you get it when you buy it. So this is the Canon menu. You've got the typical options, all that stuff. They've got about 6 or 7 options per menu, category and some submenus. And it's basically, the video functionality is very limited. For example, you can set stuff like resolution, frame rate, how you want to record audio, and then you've got this these live view functions. That means you can see what you're taking a photograph of in the back of in the back screen, and then you have some functionality. For example, you can zoom in digitally. You may, yes, like this, like that helps you to figure out the correct focus of your subject, and that can be difficult to do because these cameras, they don't have any continuous autofocus. So they are like typical movie cameras. You have to do the focus yourself, which isn't so much of a problem if you think about it, except maybe for documentary work where it can be difficult to find the correct focus in real time manually. Usually when you're doing interviews, when you're doing film work, short films or features, you know what is going to happen in the scene, so focus is not that important. But still, we're trying to make it easier with Magic Lantern, these things. For example, once you start recording, you cannot use these zoom functions anymore. So once the camera is recording to its internal video format, which is quite a compressed consumer format, which is really not helpful if you're doing movie work, you're limited to the view the camera presents you without any zoom, and you have to figure out the focus by magic, I guess. So Have you loaded the Magic Lantern? Okay, so we'll do that now. Magic Lantern is not installed on the camera in any way, like you do flashing the firmware or anything like that. The only thing we actually do is we enable an auto boot flag. So we just switch that one flag in the configuration of the camera, and once it starts, it's looking for you'll go into that later on. But basically what I want to stress, and we have to repeat it again and again, this is not a replacement firmware. It's a alongside running software that plays nicely with what Kenneth has done. And you don't have to flash it any time with every new version, which makes our development process much better. So here we are. This is still the Canon menu, but we're going in there and changing some things. And you can see, for example, just a second, this is what our menu looks like. So on these cameras, you've got different buttons for all kinds of different products. So sometimes the buttons are a bit, they change from model to model, but basically it's all the same. So here we are, functionality. Audio, like I said before, you just might want to go through it. We've got menus for audio, for exposure, which means how much light do you get in, how do you work with the aperture and shutter and everything like that. Then we've got overlay functionality. That means stuff we can we can show on the screen to help the user get the most of the camera. We'll have to see. There you go. Here we are. So all the stuff you can see right now. The exposure help, the audio levels, all the information below, it's generated by Magic Lantern. And to me, in my everyday work, this is so important. These things totally change the way I can work with the camera. So that is the overlay functionality. We'll go into some of that maybe just in a second. So maybe we'll just turn on and off some stuff. ZBrush is a functionality you can find in any camera that helps you detect areas in the screen. For example, you can see the red stripes in the back there. This is the camera tells you over there you've hit the limit. You won't get any more color information in that area because you're just over the top. The sensor can't sample any more into the 8 bits it has to compress it into. So it helps me to find the correct exposure. The same goes for the graph on the top right, which tells you how close you are to the perfect setup. Right now it's very dark, you can see it, and now all the different color areas up to the higher frequencies come in. And when you're over the top, Magic Lantern tells you you're like crossing 7 in the red or 6 in the green. So that's one of the things. Focus peaking is also something people use a lot. It helps you detect areas that are in focus or that are not. Maybe I can do it like this. You can, yeah, so you can see right now it tells you the focus is probably somewhere around my glasses, and now it should be somewhere around my hand. And it helps me so much when I have to do real-time focus pulling. Usually that kind of stuff you get it in some cameras, mostly you get it on external monitors that are very expensive, so it's a nice feature to have in a photo camera. But it's focus peaking. Magic Zoom is a functionality that we cannot present right now, but it basically gives you the option to record video and at the same time digitally just on the screen zoom in, and it helps you get the correct exposure. And it's pretty fast as well. So crop marks, that's helps you if you're aiming for different aspect ratios, just to get an idea. So we're just throwing in an image over there that helps me find the right framing for the shot I'm trying to do. You can put all kinds of crop marks over there. The histogram is the one thing you saw in the top right corner. It helps you to get some idea about the range of your color dynamics. Then we've got a waveform. It's also a different way to know if your levels are right, if you're aiming for NTSC or PAL. So that's something usually people also use in the pro area, and Canon would never introduce that kind of functionality into a camera like that. You can see now we're far over the top, and we know we probably need to do something. Maybe get less light into it, or change the scene, or dim the lights, stuff like that. And the vectorscope also, it's a tool that helps you for our pros. It's a tool to try and get the correct color tones, for example, of skin or of other areas of the screen. So that's the overlay functionality. Now, for the movie things, usually the camera records in H.264, which is a consumer codec. You all know it; it's used everywhere. So Canon used that one because they have to compress so much information in real time onto those cards and have somehow to write out all that full HD 1080p video. So they chose to H.264, and we've tried for a long time and pretty successfully to increase the bit rate and improve the codec as much as the hardware permits, because this is obviously not done on the CPU, but in an external special chip, so we've got certain limits, and it depends on the model, but you can only go so far in that area. At some point, you just can't do anything more. Right, so gradle exposure, maybe it's... we'll just skip that. Everyone who's really interested in that, just check out the homepage. HDR video. This is something that actually it's the game changer we've been looking for. So what HDR video is doing is it is using the raw 14-bit image information the sensor presents inside the camera that is then tortured in all ways to get into the H.264 video, and we're trying to circumvent that as much as possible and get the full color information. So now you can do things that really cameras in the absolute pro area are featuring, and what we're doing, we're just writing out raw photo frames from the sensor that later on you can take into your nonlinear editing software, whatever it is, and do all kinds of fancy stuff with the color levels and color grading that you have really we have never touched before. So on the 5D Mark III we can do full HD. In 24, 25, maybe 30p, we will see how that works out. And it also gives you the ability to use a crop sensor. So what that means, usually the camera has a large sensor and you have to skip some lines in order to quickly read out the information and get it down to the size you can actually use and write down to the cards in a reasonable bit rate. And when we change the aspect ratio of that, we can just sample a part of the entire sensor, maybe just the middle or the bottom right or whatever, and that's it's like a digital zoom that does not upscale the sampled image, but just takes a part of the sensor, which means it's perfectly crisp. It's a very nice image. Can you demonstrate it in 7? Okay, so we are not in 180p. It's not yet working, but we can show you later on if anyone is interested. We've brought all kinds of cameras and we'll demonstrate it to you. So raw video, obviously, it takes a lot of place and we'll have to figure out how to get it into the cards and maybe to other external media we don't really know yet, but it looks like that it might be the holy grail for people who try to do great movies on a budget. Also, it completely broke the news in the internet about Magic Lantern right now. So vignetting is also a feature that helps us a lot. You know, all these cameras, the lenses and the sensor, they interplay, and sometimes it causes these effects. Now we're doing it the other way around. He's applying some kind of blackening in the corners, but you can also use it differently. You can bright up the corners because maybe when your lens is introducing these problems, you can fix them in the camera. And it's really very helpful to do that before you record the image. You can always try to do it later on, but it's a lot of help. We've got the same thing for maybe fisheye lenses, which drastically screw the image, and we are trying to get it back. It helps you in previewing the scene you're going to get later on. So we've also got photo functionality. Photo functionality means still images. And there we've got bracketing, which means you can do a series of images, HDR images, for example. Maybe you've heard about that. You take a series of pictures in different in different exposures, and then you combine them in post and get a much higher dynamic range. You get those images where you've got the clouds and the sun and the dark areas of the image, everything looking great. It looks like it's painted or something. So we've got auto detection of that. You can just put your camera somewhere, use the auto feeder by Magic Lantern, and it will do the stuff for you, or you can tweak it as much as you want and get incredible results, as long as your object isn't moving too fast or at all. So intervalometer means we're taking pictures every X seconds. It's for time leaks photography, for example, just aiming at the sky or aiming at the forest and just taking a picture every 30 seconds for the whole day, and it looks really great. So you don't have to sit by a camera and do it manually anymore. And interestingly, the cheap cameras, they've got this functionality. The pro cameras, they don't even introduce it. So we had to do that. Bulb timer is for really long exposures. You just open the, let the light in and wait for, I don't know, 20 seconds, for example, for very dark scenes, for artistic reasons. It's a really nice feature to have. Then we also talked about different ways of releasing the shutter, which means, for example, I can clap in my hands and the camera is going to take a picture, or we can focus an area of the screen with motion detect, and as soon as something moves in, the image is taken. You can imagine, like, for example, you've got a bird's nest, and the mother is coming and going, and just aim the camera on there, and you toggle the motion detect, and as soon as the mother comes, the camera takes its frame, and you just leave it there for the whole day, and you've got some pretty amazing pictures in the end. Silent picture is a functionality which basically is the groundwork for the HDR video we've talked about. So it samples the sensor on a raw level in 14 bits, invites the image out. It doesn't even have to release the shutter mechanism, which is a nice feature to have, because the shutter is basically the one expansive moving part of the camera. The shutter count basically degrades your camera in a certain way. If you want to sell your camera on eBay at some point, people will want to know how many pictures you've actually taken by releasing the shutter. So silent picture samples the sensor, doesn't release the shutter because it's already open. It's pretty nice to have. Some other options, like deflickering. For example, if you take pictures for a long time, the light conditions change, you never get perfect even light conditions. That helps with that. And it writes the metadata to the file, so in post-processing, the utilities can take that metadata on a sidecar in the files and optimize it a bit. Focusing, yeah, it helps you. It's a help for programming the areas that are in focus and then just moving to them through the motorized lens. It's also a very nice feature for controlled focusing. Dot-tune AFMA is also something we're pretty proud of. It helps you a lot in optimizing what you can get out of your lenses. So we're using it's a feature that usually involves a lot of manual labor, so Magic Lantern helps you with that a lot. Then we've got a lot of display options, for example, in different lighting conditions, you made ones, yada, 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 all that kind of stuff. It helps you with these things. The preferences, obviously. Then we've got a scripting engine where you can write PicoC scripts that are executed. It's for those people who want to do more fun stuff like Zocoban on their cameras. So we're trying to introduce scripting functionality. And people are slowly taking it up. And even those who are not inside the hardware so much can now join the project and improve it through some scripts. The debugging menu obviously is very interesting for our developers, not so much for the users. But it helps us a lot to get an idea of what is happening inside. And you have to realize we have really not understood the cameras in their entirety yet. So much is just trying and executing something, and it's locking up, and we have to start again. So these things, by now, they help so much in the process. Like a year ago, it was really hard to get inside of these cameras. Yes, maybe you can see this. For example, here we've got the shutter count. We've got about 10,000 shutter releases in this camera. Usually you can't see that when you're not a support service member. You get some information about battery and all that kind of stuff. So we've got a modules functionality now. It's like Linux modules where you can load them in at runtime level. You can add functionality and hook into Magic Lantern at basically every area. So the raw video is the first thing we implemented in that way. All right, so that's probably what we'll do for the live presentation. And now we go into the more hardcore software, hardware stuff. And Georg is going to explain that to you. First, I'll show you these examples. We've talked about RAW before, and we really can't stress enough how much that changes for us. So RAW, as you can see, you can do about an 85 megabyte per second video stream, which really gives you all the options you want when you're doing video work. You can, for example, imagine a scene where you've got a very dark room, and outside the sun is shining, and the windows are completely blown out. You have no way to get the right exposure. But through these hard HDR 14-bit images, you can try to get into the middle of it, and then raise the darks and lower the whites, and it really helps you to get amazing images. We've got an example here. Also, the debayering, which means you're debayering the different color information, is not done in the camera, but by software on your computer, which can be much more elaborate and gives greater, better results. So this is what usually you get when you do a... This is digitally zoomed to show it a bit more strongly, but you can see in the area of the candle, there is no information anymore. It's completely blown out. And also you can see there in the back, it's all very washed out, and also you get all kinds of artifacts from H.264 and all that kind of stuff. So with the RAW, you can see how the candle is captured much more nicely. And this is just a very basic demo shot. Imagine more elaborate things outside with dark areas and stuff like that. Or areas with a lot of motion. You've got a lot of wind, and the waves are moving like crazy, and the H.264, it would completely collapse and all kind of a blocky mess. But with RAW, you just write out in a constant bitrate the single frames. You don't have to worry about that anymore. You just have to worry about card space. So to demonstrate it again, you can see it pretty clearly. So people are very happy with that functionality, me included.
Okay. Hello, everyone. Before we start with the hardware details, I want to introduce myself. My name is Georg Hofstetter. I am a developer behind Magic Lantern. Magic Lantern is mainly a spare time job for me. In my main job, I am embedded software developer in the automotive sector. So I'm dealing with ECUs and prototype ECUs all day. And it's all about work-life balance. I can't develop all day, so I'm reverse engineering in the night. So that's how I came to Magic Lantern. Now let's start with the details. In every latest camera, like the 5D3, 60 or whatever, you have two main chips. The first one is the coprocessor. It's a MIPS processor. We don't know much about it. It seems to run the same operating system like the main processor itself, but it's different architecture. It just deals with real-time events, with shutter actuations, with buttons and so on. The main processor, Canon names it DIGIC, 4 or 5. It contains an ARM946 CPU with, I think, 200 megahertz. It has some data and instruction cache, not a lot. It has no MPU, an MPU, and a lot of dedicated hardware. So we have hardware for encoding H.264 and JPEG. We have hardware for hash algorithms, a lot of stuff. We identified some of the hardware. There's still a lot, like Atkins, Defn, 2Ad. We know what it's doing, but we're not sure how to use. Okay, camera, 256 megabytes of RAM, or 512 is a lot. And the usual stuff, LCD, CF, SD, and so on. Okay, about the firmware. When the camera is powered on, first the bootloader is checking for firmware itself. If no firmware is available, then the flash mode is loaded. Or if some flag is set, then it's checking the autoexec.bin on the SD card. This means it's looking for binary file on the SD card, if that file is there, it's getting loaded into memory and executed. The main firmware is called DryOS. It's separated from the bootloader, of course. It's a real-time OS based on MUI-tron. It's consisting of different layers, has a middleware and stuff, and it's providing dynamic memory management. Okay, so the interesting thing is, how do we hook into the main OS, main firmware? Magic Lantern runs in RAM only. There's no firmware code anywhere, so you don't have to reflash your device. So we hope warranty is not void by this procedure. Usually it's not. We're patching some memory stuff, like the memory pools, so we get our own memory. We're hooking into tasks and patching some code in startup routines. There are two main methods to do this. One is to relocate RAM, relocate firmware parts into RAM. The other method is using the cache. We're patching cache. So the CPU thinks, oh, on this memory address, this data is placed, but it's our own data. Okay. After starting task, we can implement our own menu. That's necessary because the standard Canon menu doesn't have this flexibility that we need. Okay. There are two methods to run Magic Lantern. I won't go too deep there. First, we can forge a firmware update file. We replace all data and just place loaders in there. This means the main OS or the bootloader loads only these loaders into RAM and executes them. There's no data flashed. And then the second method, it's autoboot. It's the named autoexec.bin on the card that is executed when some flag is set. Okay, there are a lot of legal issues we have questions about, we try to clear. The main problem is, do we violate any copyright? Are we allowed to reverse engineer and to patch in RAM? We're not sure about it because in some countries it's not clearly allowed. In some countries it's allowed. That's a problem, especially since Canon has some license agreements in other countries that say, do not reverse engineer this firmware. So what do we do with it? Maybe, I think it was Japan. In Japan, you're not allowed to reverse engineer and to use these results. So we're not sure if this is all fine. Until now, Canon didn't respond. We're fine with it. Canon starts no lawsuit against us. That's good. Okay. Still, there are important ethical decisions. We talked about raw video mode. So let's say we find out how to make to enable 4K mode. 4K in RAW. Should we do it? Because this would seriously cause problems for the camera, for the video cameras Canon also sells. Those video cameras are useless then if the $3,000 camera can do the same. We try to find the best way lately with raw video. I think it's borderline, but we decided to release it. Okay. Is Magic Lantern good for Canon? I think yes, it is. There are some people who already said, hey, cool, you can place your own firmware, your own hacks. I like it, I buy a Canon camera. Also, with the latest raw video hack, the Canon camera prices started to raise again. Not a lot, I think the latest model raised by $1,000. The second-hand cameras, so they got more expensive just because of our hack. Very interesting. Okay. There are other projects that do the similar stuff like us. It's CHDK for consumer compact cameras and some other ones like for Nikon and so on. Those will have the same legal issues like we have, but they also had no problems yet. Okay, so if you have some support for us, some interesting stories about legal issues and financial issues with such large projects spread over the world, please contact us. We're outside the door. You also can play with these cameras. We're providing them for the next half hour. You can play with them, check Magic Lantern, and just play a bit with it. Okay. Thank you very much.
So thank you very much. We would have time for one question, but then we have to hand over so Carson can give his talk about All Watched Over by Machines of Loving Grace. And and this T-shirt as a small present.
That's great.
Thanks that you are hacking for our freedom. And is there another question here? Else, okay, there's one question. We handle that.
Are you in contact with Canon? Do they somehow support it, or do they accept it that you work around their cameras?
Yeah. So we don't have any direct contact with Canon, because our idea is if they want to talk to us, they can do that at any time, and so we won't force that on them.
There were some rumors that Canon engineers said they don't have any problem with Magic Lantern. They only have problems if the camera is defect due to Magic Lantern. They won't handle this in the standard warranty the user has to pay. But there's no real official statement, which can be good or bad, who knows.
Yeah, maybe that's also very interesting. We haven't really bricked any cameras so far. Sometimes they're not working for a while, but we always figure out how to do it. The rest, they're typical hardware errors. So that's something to keep in mind. This stuff really doesn't trash your cameras. And I guess that makes Canon happy in a way, too.
These were four cases I can remember of.
Four cases were not difficult.
I'm sorry that we cannot accept any further questions, so I have to ask you to talk with Georg and Michael outside of the room, because we now have to prepare for the next presentation. Thank you very much.